It is week 6 of the year 2021, and you're listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Welcome back, everyone. And here's another episode of my weekly show for my supporters and patrons. Thank you so much for your support. Lots of things to talk about, so let's get started with a health segment.
Just look at the x-rays! You see that dark spot there? Whiplash!
Whiplash? Oh no!
And this smudge here, that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma!
If you've already listened to the latest episode of The Walk, you hear a very cheerful me, happy that I'm feeling much better. I have much more energy than a few weeks ago. So that's good news. I think I'm finally truly recovering and getting back to my old self. Of course, I still need to work on my stamina and start training again. But I think that the therapy has really worked, and that's a good thing, and it makes me happy. However, there are also lots of things happening that are not making me very happy and cause a lot of stress and even anxiety. And it's all related to kind of my near future. You know, I've explained before that I hoped that even though the bishop had decided to give me a full-time appointment for media work, and I would no longer work in the parishes here in this city and in the other parish, that I would still be allowed to stay in this rectory, or at least in part of the rectory, because of the location of this town for my work. If I usually for my TV work travel to various parts of the country, and this is a very central location, so if I would live, for instance, completely in the eastern part of the Netherlands, there would be parts where I just couldn't go by car and film and return on the same day. I just wouldn't have enough time because of travel. So that's one reason. The other reason is that we've been building up, of course, the community around the International Mass, and we've got a very good relationship with the local community here in the town where I live. And so parishioners are also joining us for that International Mass. We've got a lot of young people and volunteers and new volunteers and altar boys and girls that are volunteering. So that's all positive. So I figured, you know, it's also beneficial for this particular location of the parish that I stay here. We've been in negotiations for about a month and a half now, and it just doesn't work out. They just want way more money than we can afford, and unfortunately they just don't want to budge, no matter what we propose. And so I got an email. When was it? Friday, I think. No, Thursday. That my bishop wanted to talk to me, or the cardinal, and then also an auxiliary bishop, about my future and about my my home or where I live. So I don't know exactly what they're gonna bring up, but my guess is that the local people from the parish have maybe made complaints or whatever, but have told the bishop that they need me to go. And maybe that I'm resisting or whatever, although I don't see it that way. We're just negotiating, and it's only been a couple of weeks that I no longer work for the parish. But anyway, maybe they're in a hurry. But that, of course, causes a lot of stress, because if I have to move, and you know what, I'm not against moving. I'm not tied to this house. I've only lived here for 2 years, so I've moved in the past many times before. But it's just that it's not, first of all, it's not at a very good time. I've just recovered from COVID. I've started to film my TV episodes. It's just a ton of work. I've got so much going on in my life and on my mind that moving and figuring out where to move to is the last thing that I can spend time on. So it would be quite derailing if I had to, you know, kind of squeeze in moving to another place. So that's one. There was another thing. Why it's not? No, and that's actually it. So it would really disturb kind of my work and my mission. Oh no, the other thing is, of course, if I move, then that's the end of the community that we formed around the International Mass. Now, thankfully, of course, I can celebrate that International Mass wherever I am, as long as there is Wi-Fi or 4G. I can always hook up my current equipment in another church, in another chapel. So that's not really the problem. But I do feel sorry for all the people that have helped me build this up over the past months, and have been very enthusiastic, and were very hopeful for the future of this little church. And, you know, this could grow into something really substantial, and it is attracting a whole bunch of new people that didn't come to our parish churches before. So you'd lose that too if I move, because, you know, it's unlikely that I can stay here in this part of the country, even, because there is a tremendous shortage of apartments. And so, you know, I'd probably have to move either to another parish that still has living quarters available, which is often not the case, because they too rent it out to other, you know, to companies or whatever institutions. Or I have to move really far away. So anyway, that is causing a lot of stress, and stress, you know, that's the worst. That's such a killer thing. And it is, I know, of course, I have some tricks to kind of calm my mind and kind of rethink things. And I've gone through a whole bunch of emotions over the past months, because I kind of felt that this was not going to end well. Thinking, you know, it's always a moment in life that can teach you something. It's an experience. Just embrace what's happening, because it's a consequence of a very deliberate choice, and that is to, you know, to really choose for this to be a priest in the media. And if this is one of the consequences, well, then it's up to me to embrace them. But you know, that's kind of on an intellectual level, that you can reason your way out of it. But there is also something like very deep inside, like very emotional level, that's much harder to calm down. And one of my tricks when I feel anxious about this, and also sad sometimes, like, is really, you know, I've worked here for 16 years. Is this how you treat me after just a couple of weeks? No longer working for your parish is, I don't know, it just feels wrong. But anyway, for me, a trick to calm myself down is to just go out for a walk. And when I got that message that, you know, the bishop wanted to talk to me, I was like, okay, this is probably the end. You know, we tried, we did everything we could to come to an agreement. And, well, apparently they brought it up to the highest level. I'm not very hopeful. I just went out for a 3 or 4 hour walk outside. Fortunately, the weather was beautiful, and that really helped, because then you realize that, you know, there's only a very small portion of my life that is tied to this, to my current condition, my current house. Most of what I do is either in front of a computer and a microphone, so that really doesn't matter where that is. I've been recording podcasts for what is it, 20 years now? No, not as long as 20 years, but 16 years at least. And so I can do that anywhere in the world. And filming is also something I most of the time do either in front of a green screen, again, doesn't really matter where that is, or outside. And I'm always traveling, either in the Netherlands or in the world. So none of that is going to be impacted by this. It's just the hassle of having to move, and then the pressure they put on me, and the feeling that you're no longer wanted. You're not even tolerated anymore. That's also linked to the kind of the tone in the way they write their emails and just their inflexibility. It's like, I really am not used to that kind of attitude. And it's something that I have a hard time dealing with that. I mean, that to me is more painful than the actual fact that I have to move. But then I also know when it's time to turn the page, embrace it, and just trust providence that it will only lead to something good. And I know that. And it's just that, well, anyway, once you get through this whole process of disappointment, uncertainty, is this going to work out? Is this not going to work out? Also frustration about kind of the tone of the conversation and the way that I'm treated. Once you go through all of that, then at one point I'm like, okay, well, let's go. I'm done with this. Let's go. And now, of course, I still have to wait and see what the bishop is going to say. And I know that I have, you know, I have nothing to blame myself for. We've been professional, business-like. We've just, you know, negotiated the way I think it should be done. So I don't blame myself for anything. But if there is no way to come to an agreement, then it means I gotta go. And I honestly don't really know what's next or where to go. I will probably also have to ask for some time to figure this out. And there are all of a sudden also lots of things going through my mind. You know, I could, of course, try to find a quick fix for the situation and ask I've already spoken to one of my friends in other parishes. Do you have some, like a rectory with some space or whatever? But that all kind of feels like patchwork, like a quick fix. But I'm also thinking, and I don't know, I still have to kind of determine, is this a flight reaction? Is this just because I'm frustrated and I want to get as far away as possible? Or is this truly maybe something that I'm called to or that could be good? I'm thinking of taking a year and do what I have always wanted to do. And that is to really go far away from home and live and work as a priest in another part of the world. I think I've told you that my grandfather used to be a missionary in China. And of course, his life ultimately ended up in a very different place that he ever thought he would be in. But a little bit of that sense of adventure that he must have had as a young boy when he, you know, volunteered to go to China. I know that I have some of that as well. You know, my tookish side in a certain way. I kind of think sometimes, well, maybe this is an occasion to make a big step, to do something, to really go on an adventure instead of going to the next village in the Shire. And so one of the first things that I thought of was, what about France? I've always loved France. I speak French just as well as English, if not better. It's my second language, you could say, because I studied for 5 years or more. Five years. Yeah, I lived for 5 years in the French part of Belgium. I was 18 when I got there. So that's still the time that you can fully assimilate a language. So I can speak French. And I don't think most people that I encounter in France or in Belgium, they can't tell that I'm from Holland. So I love France. It's just that it's a big country. And it is... Do you go to the countryside? Do I find myself a small parish where I ask the local bishop if I can assist? What about internet? That's kind of the first thing that came to my mind. You know, we're very spoiled here in the Netherlands with very fast internet, which is pretty vital to what I do. Is you know, I, if I go to a small town, you know, among the vineyards of France, is that going to be connected enough for my type of work? But just the idea of going to another country, kind of submerge in the culture there and in the faith, I could tell wonderful stories. Could make really, really interesting programs. But that's just one thing. So France, kind of obvious because I'm so familiar with the country and I think I understand the French. And I speak it very well. Italy was another thing that I thought of. Probably what most people would say, well, why don't you go to Rome? You know, don't they need media priests in Rome? And of course, I'm very at home in Rome. I've lived there for several years. I speak Italian a bit, not fluently, but I do speak it enough to kind of survive. But then I'm thinking, you know, I love Italy. I love Rome. I love the food, the culture, of the church. There's the Pope. But after, you know, I know that every time I'm in Italy after a couple of months, I also, it's a bit too much for me. I will never be an Italian. I will never fully understand Italians, I think. Although I have many Italian friends. But it's a very, very different culture from my own Dutch culture. And so I don't know if I would like to live there. I love to visit. I loved to study there, but I'm not sure if I can live there. But maybe, I don't know. Think of Mountain Butorac, my friend who is a guide there and has a wonderful, what is it? Like he streams videos now and has set up a Patreon account because, of course, he can't really do any of his regular work now that the country is locked down. I mean, he's from the US. He speaks a little bit of Italian, but not as much as I do. And he kind of survives there. So maybe it's an option. It wouldn't be my first choice. Let's put it that way. Then another thing that came to mind is if I really want to go, if I really want to realize that goal of creating high quality documentaries, to really step up my game from a weekly TV show to full-fledged documentaries. And it kind of makes sense to be in an environment with English-speaking people. There are a lot of those here in the Netherlands, thankfully. Although you're in the center of the country, it's, you know, a bit harder to surround yourself with English-speaking people and expats and whatnot, students, than in other parts. A friend of mine, Father Henry, is in Wageningen, and there's a university there with lots and lots of English-speaking people. That would be much easier to have guests on my shows and even form a team an international team for the work that I do. Amsterdam is another city, of course, that is very international, where it wouldn't be a problem at all to find Catholics, English-speaking Catholics, that could, you know, would want to join me in my media mission. But of course, another option is, once it's possible to travel again, England, Scotland. Although, for both countries, Scotland, not really a country, but maybe in the future. But for that part of the world, with Brexit, it's after Brexit, it has become a lot more difficult to work there and to get a permit. There's no free. How'd you say that? I can't just work like that in the UK without a permit and everything. So for the most of Europe, it's very simple. I could just, you know, move to France and pick up, you know, start working there and make money and probably pay taxes there and in the Netherlands. But anyway, it's a lot easier than England and Scotland has become now. And there's Ireland. I love Ireland. Oh my gosh. I love Ireland. I love the Irish. There's a lot to love there. On the other hand, while I was there on vacation, we went to one of those Irish parishes, and that still feels very, very strange and so different from the country where I grew up with that I'm not sure if I would be useful. I'm not sure if I would be able to, I don't know, have a ministry there that makes sense. Since I do believe that a shepherd needs to be close to his sheep, preferably also understand his sheep. And I'm not sure if that's the case with me in Ireland. The United States, probably impossible. There are way too many roadblocks there. That would be a temporary thing, but it's very, very hard to get a permit there to work. And I don't know. I don't see that as a viable option. Probably the same thing with Canada. So then I'm thinking, where else do they speak English? And where else could I go for an adventure? And again, this is just, I don't even know if this is just me kind of dreaming something up that's completely unrealistic, or whether this is something I should pursue. I don't know. But I'm just sharing it with you because, as you know, I've always been extremely open about what's going on in my life, how I think about that. And I almost never have ready-made answers not to your questions or issues. And the same is true for things that are going on in my life. I'm figuring it out just as you are figuring things out in your life. And sometimes I discover what to do, and sometimes I completely mess up and have to conclude that I was wrong and I have to try something else. So anyway, I was thinking, if there's one place in the world where I felt at home in a certain way and where I felt like I could live here, I could stay here, if there's one country in the world, it would be New Zealand. And to a lesser extent, Australia. In both countries, I felt extremely happy. And there was something about the people there. And of course, I've only met a small subset of the Australian and Kiwi population. But they were amazing people. And I've been there twice. And yet it has had more impact on me than any other country that I've ever visited, including Italy. And I often think back of those that short time that I spent there. And maybe the time that I spent in Australia and New Zealand was way too short and has not given me a real impression of what it is to live in that country. So I could be totally wrong there. And maybe If I would stay there for a more extensive period of time, I would tell myself, what were you thinking? This, you don't belong here or whatever. But judging from the friends that I know that live there, also some people that have moved there from, for instance, the United States, I have yet to meet someone who said that they didn't like it there and that they wanted to go home. Most people were like, "Ah, oh, this is amazing to live here." So those are the more extravagant options. And it is a bit difficult now that I'm, you know, apparently the parish here seems to be in such a rush to get me out of this rectory. The temptation is to also rush this process of discerning what to do next. So I was thinking, well, what if I take a year? I give myself a year to maybe go to one or two countries and live there for a few months and to work there, to take it, not a sabbatical or anything like that. I don't need that. I'm not tired. On the contrary, I want to move on and work and create beautiful stuff. But I would love to go and live a year in a different environment to also kind of step away from the past, what is it now, almost 25 years of my priesthood. I've had these moments before when I was a priest for 20 years, I decided to walk the Camino. That was kind of an experience similar to what I think I may want to do now. It was, let's stop what I'm doing, step away from the world that I know and the church that I know, and go on an adventure. And it was scary. It was really scary to leave home with just a backpack of about 6 kilograms of stuff. And that was it. And yet, it was the most amazing journey of my life. And that was only 6 weeks. Imagine a year. What I would learn, what that could do to me. Good and bad, maybe. But I think it is the type of adventure that kind of makes sense. This year, I'll be a priest for 25 years. I won't be able to celebrate that in the parish where I've worked a majority of my years. At least I don't suppose that's going to happen because, well, my life just took a different turn. So, you know, forget about that. It's not really important, I think, but this could be just one of these moments where you make a bigger change. You go for a bigger adventure. See what that brings you. And if after a year, you know, it's enough and it's time to go back, then I can always come back. But if I don't pursue this bigger step, if I don't use this occasion to maybe jump in deeper waters and see what that brings me, I may regret it afterwards. Like you had a chance and you decided to just do what is most predictable, what feels the safest. And I keep thinking of that moment where Gandalf visits the Shire, first Bilbo and then later on Frodo, and tells them that he needs them to follow him. And especially Bilbo, very much like me, is like, but I'm so comfortable here. I don't know if I want to. And then there's this Tookish side that pulls him to this adventure. And he's like, well, why not? And ultimately, of course, he runs after Gandalf. And he's going on that adventure. And that is like, am I just telling myself that? How realistic is this? Or maybe adventures are never truly completely realistic. What I do know is every adventure will have its share of problems, and it's never as rose-colored as you think it will be. But it's almost always worth it. The Camino was a lot harder than I thought, and it totally did not deliver what I expected it to do, namely, you know, deep insides and incredible mystical experiences along the way and whatnot. None of that. I was just hurting every day from walking, and I felt very uncomfortable most of the time. And I did not have any mystical experiences. However, I would do it again in a heartbeat because it helped me meet people on the way and form connections and experience things that I would have never, ever, ever dreamt of if I'd stayed at home. It was the most amazing journey of my life. And that was only 6 weeks. So, anyway, enough. I need to get to the rest of my show, but that's also what this show is for. Sometimes I want to really kind of lay bare my heart and what's going on right now. And because I think that the relationship that I feel that I have with the community that supports me in this, you support me because you come along for the journey. Everything that I've done before, including not really adventures, but still entrepreneurial experiments like starting a podcast and YouTube channels and whatnot, you've been part of that journey. And so you're kind of walking alongside of me, even though it's at a distance. And so that's why I want to share these things as well from time to time, even though probably other people would tell me, my mom, don't share so much. You don't know who's listening and what are they going to think of you? Well, I hope that you understand why I'm sharing this, and I hope you understand a little bit how I feel and what's going on. And again, always realize that my view of what's happening, including what's happening now in the parish, is a very partial view and very colored view. But so you can always object to, you know, my depiction of what's going on. But what you can't object to is how I experience things. That is a very personal thing. And that is what I'm sharing with you. Anyway, let's step into the kitchen. One of the mysteries of Chinese takeaway for me has always been black bean sauce, or Taosi sauce, as they call it in the Chinese restaurant that I still visit from time to time. It's a Chinese takeaway near the old rectory where I lived. It's not even a restaurant. It's just a tiny, small shop almost, with a kitchen that you never see. And there is a counter, and you just order from the menu what you want, and then 10 minutes later, you bring it home. There are lots and lots of kitchens and takeaways in my country. We love this kind of Indonesian version of Chinese food. And usually they have the same menus everywhere in the Netherlands. You get the same food. But there's still often a discernible difference in quality. And there is a Chinese takeaway here in this village where I currently live. And, you know, it's okay. It's a little bit more expensive than others. And it's, you know, it's all right. It's kind of run-of-the-mill Chinese-Indonesian food. But the other one is actually good. It's the same stuff, but it is, I don't know, it's more flavorful. It's... I don't know. It's probably just the cook, and it's not a huge difference. But for me, that is definitely the food that is my ultimate comfort food. So when I came back from filming in the cold for an entire day, I drove to my old Chinese takeaway and ordered my favorite dishes, and the one that I always order there is chicken breast, so pieces of chicken breast and some veggies in black bean sauce. And I've tried in the past to kind of figure out how to make black bean sauce. At first I thought, well, maybe it's just something they buy in bulk for restaurants. You have these specialty shops, and you can't even buy that in regular stores in the Netherlands, not even the specialized ones. So sometimes that's an issue when you want to replicate what you taste in Chinese restaurants, but you just can't get the ingredients. It's like fast food chains that have their secret, you know, herbs mixture that they use on their patties or on their fries, and you just don't have access to those ingredients. So you can never really duplicate it. You can only approximate it. But a while ago, I discovered a YouTube channel of someone who's actually worked in a Dutch Chinese restaurant, so it's not really Chinese food, but anyway, who knows how to prepare, has been preparing all these standard menus for years and years and years. And on that YouTube channel, most of her videos are already a couple of years old. I think she's currently working in a sushi store or something like that. But anyway, she just shows you step by step how to make it and how to, you know, duplicate it. And I followed a couple of her recipes, and I was amazed that it was exactly the food that I would normally get at Chinese takeaway. So that made me super excited. It's like, wow, okay, so it's not magic. This is actually learnable. And so I just today, I searched the channel to see if I could find one of the recipes with black bean sauce. And lo and behold, there was one. And it was exactly the dish that I ate today from Chinese Takeaway. My favorite dish. And it was, as usual, way less complicated than I thought it would be. What I remember, I'm not sure if I can totally replicate it, but it's just regular chicken breast. You cut it up in pieces. You fry that in oil. Not deep fry, of course, but you put an ample amount of oil in there. But before you put the chicken breast in, after you cut it into pieces, you add some oyster sauce, some pepper and salt, a little bit of, what's the word? Vetsin. What else did you put on there? Oh, a little bit of rice wine. A little bit of rice wine. Then you mix that and oil, usually flavored oil, so oil that you've kind of prepared with garlic and onions and stuff, but you can also buy that pre-prepared. So you put in some oil. You mix it all together, and then you add a little bit of cornstarch. That is kind of a secret that my mom also used. The cornstarch seals the pores of the chicken breast. And so it, when you then cook it, the meat does not dry out as quickly. So anyway, that's what you do. Then you cut a bell pepper, a red bell pepper, into chunks, some spring onions. What else did you put in? Mushrooms, the darker ones, the chestnut type. Gosh, what else? She used bamboo as well. Garlic, of course. You chop two cloves of garlic up. That's for the sauce, I think. Some shallots also. Dried black beans. I assume that they were dried. The only difference with the black beans that I have, which I have to kind of put in water overnight, is these were from a Chinese store. And it said salt, pre-salted black beans. So I think you didn't have to leave them overnight in water. They were wrapped in plastic. And so, but anyway, you still need to take that out and put them in water. Did she boil it or not? I think she put them in boiling water. I'm not sure. But anyway, you then add, what was it, for the sauce? So, of course, you can cut up whatever veggies you want to mix in. Some Chinese restaurants even use cucumber chopped up. And tauge, which are these kind of bean sprouts. Is that called? No, it's not called tauge. Anyway, bean sprouts. And then the sauce, I think, was made by adding oil, this mixture of black beans and water, I think, shallots, garlic. But I wonder if you don't start with frying the garlic. And probably you start with frying the garlic and the onions and stuff, just so it starts to release flavor. Then you add the water with the black beans, pre-salted black beans. She also used like the red pepper, you know, the kind of spicy ones. You bring that to a boil, and then you use some potato starch that you mix with cold water. And once the sauce, you know, is boiling, and the black beans start to release its flavor, then you add the mixture of potato starch and water so that the sauce gets thicker. And at that point, I think you throw in the other veggies, or maybe you already first used oil to fry the veggies a little bit, That's probably what you do. Yeah, you first kind of walk the veggies. You take them out. You make the sauce, and then you add everything into the sauce, and including the bits of chicken breast that you already fried. That's how simple it is. I mean, I was watching the video. I was like, I think I can do that. Of course, I still need to kind of remember the ingredients, but this is not rocket science. I can do. So the next time, I'm going to try to duplicate the favorite dish from my favorite Chinese takeaway. And I will let you know how I fare.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
Okay, so I decided what to do. Last time I told you I was still thinking about my Marvel Unlimited subscription and whether to continue for another year or not. It costs $75 to renew it for another year, which is, if you divide it by 12, it's not that expensive. It's about $5-6 if I euro, so it's kind of what I pay for Prime Video, Amazon Prime. So it's not that I can't afford it, but then I was like, how much have I truly read? How many comics? I don't even think that I read 10. So if you consider how few comics I actually read, and then you look at the price, then this is absolutely not like Amazon Prime or Spotify or anything else. Those services, I pay for them, but I use them all the time, all day long when it comes to Spotify. But that's not the case for Marvel Unlimited. Oftentimes, I only read comics because I feel guilty that I have the subscription and I don't read comics enough. So, yeah, I decided to cancel it. And it's part of this process now that I'm thinking of moving, you know, what I need to do. I know what my big task during the days of Lent is going to be. It's more radical decluttering. I need to make myself lightweight and mobile, which means I have to get rid of a lot of the clutter. And you know, getting rid of a subscription, it's not really decluttering. It's not emptying my hard drives or anything, but it is just letting go of things that you don't really need. I would never let go, at least not in the foreseeable time, for instance, of my Storytel subscription, which is kind of Audible, but then different. I love it. It's a flat fee, and you can listen to as many audiobooks as you want. So that's, in that respect, it's much better than Audible. But I use that all the time. I love listening to audiobooks. It's totally my thing. So I pay like $11 a month, and I would pay double because it's so, don't tell them, but it is so necessary for the way in which I consume books. But that is absolutely not the case with Marvel Unlimited. So I had to let go of that, which probably also means that I'm going to scrap the comic book section here in this podcast, and I'll come up with something else. Maybe, you know, animated movies or something. But that's something that will always be part of my regular media intake. Yeah, that's it. Oh, I skipped one section, and that is, what did I learn on the internet? I was listening to some old recordings that I made. And I think the series, this is a series that I recorded inside Lord of the Rings Online. And it's actually how some of you have gotten to know me, because they found that in their, you know, iTunes store or whatever. So it was a series that was recorded in game, but because Lord of the Rings Online is such a faithful recreation of the different regions of Middle Earth, I did not play the game, but I recorded like tours inside Middle Earth, and we would visit all these places that people know from the books. But because the game has great audio, it was very much as if I was really walking around in Middle Earth. Now, when SQPN and Tridio split up, we drafted a list of series that were online back then, and of course SQPN should be left with a nice catalog of content. And since with Tridio I was moving more towards, I would still of course continue these podcasts, but I would move towards more video production. I kind of handed over all the series that were related to popular entertainment, like Secrets of Lord of the Rings and Secrets of Harry Potter. Now, these series are no longer available to the general public. So SQPN has stored them in an archive. I think you can still, maybe they're in a store or something like that. But anyway, I still get regular questions from time to time from you know, old listeners. They're like, oh, I so wish I could listen to the Lord of the Rings series one more time. But I can't find them anywhere. Do you still have a copy? And then I have to say, well, no, I don't have that stuff anymore. That's now SQPN, but they haven't put it online. So anyway, I was thinking, well, maybe I should get in touch with Dom and see if they would mind if I would republish some of those older episodes. Maybe only for the people that are just like old fans, for old time's sake. Same with Harry Potter too. There's some people that are really, really missing those episodes and wish that they could go back, especially because people are sometimes like rereading the books and everything. But of course, as you can imagine, all those shows were recorded with SQPN branding at the beginning and at the end, where it would play a jingle and it was like SQPN. Like Paul Camerata's voice, he was amazing. So I figured, well, but would it be possible to just retain the actual content without the branding? Is that even possible? And then the thing is, these are all MP3s, and some of those were recorded in the very early days of podcasting, when we were still trying to save space, for instance, and bandwidth, so we would use a very low bit rate for those stereo MP3s. The thing is with MP3, if you load it into, for instance, Audible, and then you cut stuff and then you save it again, it actually deteriorates the quality because it adds compression to compression, which creates a lot of digital artifacts. So I've been looking around to see if there is an editor that can edit MP3s without affecting the quality. And it turns out that's actually pretty hard to find. Finally ended up with Fission, Fission, which is made by Rogue Amoeba. So it's only available for Macintosh computers. And they have an app that allows you to cut off certain parts of an MP3 and save it, but it will still be the same, exact same quality as before the editing. So in theory, technically, it's possible to strip off the branding and then repost it or make it available. But I haven't spoken with Dom, and I don't know if they would be even willing to consider that. But, you know, maybe. We can always see. But I would love to kind of listen back to those older episodes. It was a lot of fun to make them. It's hard to believe that it's like 15 years ago. I feel so old. Anyway, in next week, I will explain something that people have been asking me about, and that is how to get your iOS screen on your PC and even use it as a video source in, for instance, OBS. I finally figured out how to do that. It requires an app to do it and some other things you need to take into account, but that would be a little bit too long for this show to explain. So stay tuned for next week's episode.
The humanoid must not escape.
I think I told you last week that one of the ways in which I try to relax and set my mind to less stressful things than my life sometimes brings me is playing Minecraft. And it's so much fun. I don't know. There is something very, very comforting and almost soothing to play Minecraft, and the only thing you need to worry about are the zombies at night. And then you can just explore and build and swim, and oh, I'm so enjoying this. But of course, I'm like 10 years behind the times. Most people that play Minecraft have moved on and learned so much about how to build things in Minecraft that they create the most amazing things. Like this video series of someone who recreated the entire grounds of Hogwarts Castle in Minecraft. Not just the tower and the big hall and then a bridge or something. Now, everything. Use the movies as a reference and build the entire thing. Not just the outside, but also the inside, the interior. It is amazing. I don't even know if it's possible to visit that yourself in Minecraft, but right now I'm just watching the YouTube channel and the videos. I'll link to it in the show notes. But it is just stunning. And it took this guy a year to build that entire castle. And I think if you would give me 10 years, I wouldn't be able to do it. It's unbelievable. It's got and it's so much fun to actually to be able to walk around in that castle. It's the same magical feeling that I sometimes have with games that create this world that you can visit. For instance, games that recreate a city, an existing city. I love that. There is a game I want to try out. It's on my Microsoft Xbox, what is it? Unlimited account? Where is it? Here it is. It's a Japanese series called Yakuza. And it's like super old. And recently they've been remastering some of those older games. And it's a very violent game. It's originally it was a brawler, so just a fighting game, and then they created a story around it. But what makes this game intriguing to me is that it is the cities in which the action takes place are modeled on real Japanese cities. Not exactly, but a lot of the atmosphere and details are based on real Japanese cities. And so the reviews that I've watched tell you that there is something about this game that is almost like virtual tourism. You get to visit Japan, or at least something that evokes Japan in detail that's very close to the real thing, but you can just walk around it in the game. Now, I know myself. I just want to play these games not for the game, but just to be able to walk around in these Japanese cities. And that's one of the things that I love so much about Cyberpunk 2077. I mean, the game is so violent and so, oh, nothing for me. No, not at all my style. But I like to walk around in this city that looks like straight from Blade Runner. It's like, I don't know, I just being in that atmosphere. And it's also for me the appeal of Lord of the Rings Online. It wasn't the gameplay. I'm not very good at playing the game and I get bored with it and frustrated. But I love Middle Earth and I love to just go sit on a horse and go visit. The only reason that I play the game was to unlock regions and get strong enough to wander around in parts of Middle Earth that I hadn't visited yet. But I love these immersive games. And for me, the next step, hopefully, is going to be VR. I'm still a sucker for VR. I want to walk around in these virtual environments in VR. And it will probably take a few more years, but that is coming. And it's going to look maybe at one point just as real as reality, and you could travel the world and visit the world and not leave your home. There is something very fascinating about that. It's like the Matrix. Oh boy. I skipped the liturgy section. So let's wrap up with that. This is about Ash Wednesday. This upcoming Wednesday, it's Ash Wednesday. It's the start of the 40 days of Lent, which is not always 40 days. Can be a little bit longer than 40 days as well. But approximately 40 days. It starts on Ash Wednesday with the imposition of ashes. And pre-COVID times, you would get a cross on your forehead with ash. And then, of course, you could post that on social media, even though the gospel of that day always tells you not to do so. You know, don't show other people that you're fasting. And yet, there is something about that the cross with ashes that people want to share. Okay. But this year, it's going to be different because of COVID. Of course, touching other people's forehead is not the safest thing to do when there is a raging pandemic. And so the Vatican has proposed that the priest sprinkles ashes on the heads of the people in church. Now, I've always been fascinated by this ritual, and since I was an altar boy since the age of 8, I've always served Mass on Ash Wednesday. And I was always wondering, what kind of ash is that? What kind of stuff is that? And for years, I'm not kidding you, I have been led to believe by older acolytes that it was, and I think my dad also conspired in making me believe that. They said, oh, it's obvious. You know that our parish priest smokes cigars, right? Well, when he smokes a cigar, he just gathers the ashes. He does that all year long. And then at Ash Wednesday, that's how he gets all this ash. And I totally believed it. And I thought it was so gross. Like, I hated cigarettes and any type of, you know, smoke, because my dad was smoking cigarettes and I was allergic to it. And I thought it was the most horrific thing ever. So to accept that the Catholic Church would encourage people to smoke cigars, it's like, so that they could celebrate Ash Wednesday, it didn't make sense to me, and it was so wrong. And I was like, how can the church condone this? Like, doesn't make sense. People need to be healthy. They shouldn't be smoking, and the church should not encourage that just because of their interest in using the ashes for Ash Wednesday. Well, in case you're wondering what the ashes are made of, let me clarify that for you and reveal what I discovered way too late in my life. And that is that those ashes are made of the branches that were used at Palm Sunday the year before. So on Palm Sunday, during the celebration, branches, sometimes palm branches. In other countries, it's a smaller leaved branches, doesn't really matter. They're sprinkled with holy water, and then people can take that home. And sometimes they will put it, you know, behind the crucifix in their rooms or whatever. And then, of course, over the duration of a year, those branches dry out. You can bring them to church, and we gather them, we burn them, and then we use a siphon to retain the ashes. So there's something really beautiful about that, you know, using blessed material from Palm Sunday the year before for the beginning of Lent. So something you used to mark the end of Lent, use that at the beginning of Lent for the next year. That makes total sense. And you know what? It's good for your health as well. That was it for today. Have a wonderful start of Lent. Ash Wednesday, we will be streaming Ash Wednesday celebrations on the usual channels. Stay tuned and keep an eye on our socials to know the exact time. Hope you can join us. If not, talk to you next week.